see. They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without face. A man without a 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 face.
Welcome, dear ladies and gentlemen, to the Rabbit Hole Radio Show with your host, David James. Wow, wow, wow. I'm telling you that I am under attack right now and have been for over a month. And in several ways, it's kind of interesting, but nothing too heavy to bear. Well, one of them is, but there's nothing I can do about it. The waves of pain continue to pulsate, to try to tame somebody or tame me or whatever it might be. But I'll just keep praising the Father and keep knowing that He doesn't always answer our prayers when we want Him to. It's not always easy to bear this, but I'll tell you something that I'm realizing right now. That I am maturing. I was always an immature fellow my whole life. Silly, talking nonsense and all kinds of foolishness and things like that. But I'm still somebody that likes humor, but I understand so much more now. Because of this Apostle Paul thing, it was quintessential in helping me to defend the gospel of the kingdom of Yahweh, the gospel of the kingdom of Jesus Christ, you know, the true gospel, because now I have seen and witnessed the false gospel. And it caused me to look again at the true gospel. And now it's more solidified in my soul than it ever has been before. But I can defend the kingdom. I am growing. And I'm believing that as I grow, you grow as with me. Because what's the purpose of these shows but to bring us to maturity in Jesus Christ? To bring us to be soldiers able to defend, not only able, but willing to defend the kingdom and to defend the gospel of Jesus Christ, the gospel of the kingdom. Against liars, against deceivers. And so, let me tell you something about this Hagee thing. I just want to tell you that I've been having some emails back and forth with a pastor from Florida. And he was the one that wrote the Hagee article. I just happened to say, well, okay, you know, at the end of the article, here's what he says at the end of the article. So I knew he's not all there. He says, who was John writing to? He was writing to the Jewish people and the Gentile world combined. Of course, to the Jew first, and then the Gentile. So I knew he's not all there, but he's willing to go against Jews and against Hagee and defend Christ, which is interesting. But guess what I found out about Mr. Reckhart? His name is Gary Reckhart. That's R-E-C-K-A-R-T. Interesting name, right? Reckhart. Get it? He's from Tampa, Florida. And he wrote this Hagee article, and it's not really well written. Sometimes he spells Messiah with an E-H and so on and so forth. But it doesn't really matter. You see, I wanted him to hear what I had to say about Hagee and the chance that he might be a white man and that he might find the truth of who the Israelites are in the Bible. Now, I'm not going to go through the whole concourse of the emails, but I will tell you that it is very interesting. He rejects the name Yahweh. He doesn't mind you calling the Jews evil, but he rejects the name Yahweh. And when I presented him, I said, well, and he told me Yahweh was both male and female. You know, they have these people like Jordan Maxwell out there saying that Yahweh is the Canaanite God and that he's the moon God and that, you know, all this kind of nonsense. And of course, that's right from the Jews. But I said to Mr. Reckhart, I said, well, they took the name Yahweh out of the scriptures over 6,800 times. I said just 6,800 times. It's really 6,830, I guess. So he told me that I was ignorant about the name Yahweh and all this, but he wouldn't answer the question. I said, well, if they took the name out, the Jewish Pharisees took the name out and said it was too holy to utter 6,800 times. If he were the evil Canaanite God and he were the hermaphrodite God that he says he is, that Yahweh is, then why would they take it out? They'd want to leave it in there to deceive the Christians. No, they took it out and they replaced it with their God, Baal, Lord, and God. You see? See, it just doesn't make any sense. If the Jews love Yahweh and it's their God, he's their God, they would have certainly not took his name out of the scriptures that many times, right? All those times. They would have left it in there as a nice deception. See, these people but you'll find out why Mr. Reckhart believes that. He rejects two-seed line theology. He rejects Yahweh. He rejects, but guess why? I asked him if he was a white man. He ignored the question. I asked him, was Noah a Jew? Was Abraham a Jew? Was the father? He ignored the question. I says, was Jesus a Jew? He said, Jesus was from the tribe of Judah. I said, you didn't answer the question. Finally, I got him to answer. I said, you also didn't answer if you're a pure white man. I bet you're not. Every plant not planted by my heavenly Father shall be plucked up. You see, this was after a little bit of the concourse when I realized that this fellow was rejecting everything. And he didn't say anything about the lost sheep of the house of Israel either. But here's what he said. He finally answered it. He said, I am descended by DNA from Iran, Israel, and Germany. While my skin is Caucasian, my mixed breed over the centuries makes me both Gentile and Jewish. But I am saved by Jesus Christ without any racial requirement. The fellow doesn't understand about hybrids. I just told him every plant not planted by my heavenly Father shall be plucked up. Cain was not planted by the heavenly Father. Cain is a creation of an unholy union between the devil or an angel and Eve. Therefore, he's an hybrid. He's not in the lineage of Adam anywhere in the Bible. And of course, the Pharisaic Jews were told by Jesus Christ that they were guilty from all the blood back from Abel to Zechariah. They are guilty of all the innocent bloodshed from Abel to Zechariah. And as I always say, from Zechariah to this very moment as well. So the fellow doesn't understand. You see, this is the problem when you're in hybrid. He believes he can be saved. He might believe some of the Bible, but then he's true to the Jew. You see, because he doesn't know who his people are. He is a corruption. He is corrupted and he is in chaos. And the worst part of the whole thing is that no matter where I look in the pulpit, I seem to keep finding Edom Esau, the Canaanite Jew, pretending to be a white man. He says he looks white. He says, wow, my skin is Caucasian. You understand? You see, we find out Hagee was a Mexican, and he's married to a Jew, Castro, right? And most likely Hagee, being from South America, has Jewish blood. Why do I keep finding the devil's children in the pulpit? Why is that? I haven't looked that many places, but even Copeland said he was a Jew, and a rich Jew at that. Not sure if he means he's actually got Jewish blood. I think he does, but I think he was trying to pretend that he was grafted into the seed of Abraham, and Abraham was a Jew, and so that makes him a grafted-in Jew. I think that's what he's trying to pull off. It's all from the Apostle Paul. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, he said to me, this other fellow here, he said, Yahweh will never be my God. He said that, right? But he also said that, and of course quoted from the Apostle Paul, and he also said that your attack on Paul sealed it for me. I will delete your videos and not watch them. You are part of the Yahweh cults with your own constructions of misinformation. I'm not part of any cult. I'm not part of any organization. I'm not part of any denomination. No. I'm of the Father. I'm with the Father. And if his name was not Yahweh, I'm sure he'd let me know. Another thing this fellow tried to pull off with me before I go on with this, we'll just go a little longer on the show, that's all, is that he tells me this, Esau did inherit the birthright, or he could have not sold it. You see? He doesn't understand these things, obviously. And I told him my favorite thing, my favorite proverb scripture, which is Proverbs 18:13. He that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it is folly and shame unto him. So, very interesting, this little, I told him there was no need. He tried to tell me that you refuse to admit Jacob's sons married Canaanite women. They were not white people. He says Joseph married an Egyptian. And his sons Ephraim and Manasseh were not white. He doesn't know that Egypt was created by white people. You see? It's pretty amazing. So anyway, that's the concourse with that. And so here again, I'm looking at people in the pulpit, and the Canaanite Jew is there. Now, you would never guess that by the name Reckhart. That sounds like it sounds like it's changed, like maybe Hart, H-A-R-T was removed, and that's a Jew name, Reckhart. But it sounds like a German name. But it's probably a German Jewish name or a derivative of it. So, there you have it, folks. These people are put into the pulpits. They get themselves involved in the word of Yahweh, and they're out there tainting the Anglo-Saxon mind, tainting the pulpit, tainting the word of God, They themselves are corruptions, and they are creating others to be corrupt like they are. They are purporting lies and doctrines of devils, and there you have it. You see, another Jew that doesn't want race being important. He doesn't know that the blacks were there before Adam was, and that there were other seed line, dragon seed line here before Adam was here. He thinks that Ham, he said Ham means Egypt means Ham, or Ham means Egypt, or black. And it's Cush that means black. So what's interesting is that he doesn't want anything to do with the racial aspect of things because that exposes everything. This is why everything goes to the Apostle Paul, because that negates all that. You don't have to be of any race. You don't have to be of anything at all. All you have to do is say some prayer quickly and you're grafted into the seed of Abraham. You become an instant Jew, not Israelite. He says Abraham's a Jew. He didn't really answer the question, but that's what he means. That's what Copeland means. So, one more dot connection here. Enough of Gary Reckhart, Reckart, however you want to say it. Let's move on to a very interesting connection. Now, I heard Pastor Eli James say many, many times that the Phoenicians are our people. And I wasn't too sure of that. But we're going to find out something now about the Phoenicians that you may find quite interesting. Eustace Mullins, and we will hear that in his book, says that the Canaanites eventually became the Phoenicians and then became the Venetians and then became the black nobility of Europe. No, the black nobility's not just in Italy, Eli, it's in all of Europe. This guy is, I don't want to say any more about him, just leave him be. Anyway, I want you to hear this. This is an excerpt, and it's about a minute and a half long. And what I want you to pay attention about is King Ahab's Jezebel. You know who Jezebel is. She was a Phoenician. And then I want you to pay attention that this king in northern Israel was anointed to kill off all the descendants of Ahab. Do you get what that means? In other words, all the children that Ahab had with this filthy whore were to be killed. But it kind of proves that what, you know, what Eustace is saying about Phoenicia being the Canaanites, it kind of connects the dots there, I think. You make your own decision. Okay, let's listen.
Omri's son Ahab was the next man to rule over the 10 tribes. In order to strengthen Israel's relations with the coastal cities, he had married Jezebel, a Phoenician princess from Tyre. While troubles persisted with Syria, all the kingdoms in the region soon faced a greater threat, the Assyrians. From Nineveh, the Assyrians were carving out an empire. They gained control of their southern neighbors in Babylon, they pushed westward to collect tribute from the cities of Phoenicia, and they moved into Syria. In 853 BC, King Shalmaneser III of Assyria fought a coalition of 12 kings at the Battle of Karkar in Syria. His famous monolithic inscription, the Kirk Steel, lists Ahab the Israelite as part of the coalition. Shalmaneser claimed victory, but it seems that Ahab and the others achieved at least a draw, since years went by before the Assyrians advanced beyond Karkar and into Israel. When Ahab died, the next kings of the house of Omri returned to local warfare against Moab and Syria. Omri's dynasty came to an end around 841 BC. At that time, Elisha the prophet sent a young man to Jehu, a captain of the army, to anoint him king of the northern nation. Jehu was told to exterminate all the sons of Ahab, and he obeyed. See 2 Kings chapter 10, verse 11.
You see what I was saying? Now, Tyre is in Phoenicia, and that all has to do with Hiram Abiff and all that kind of stuff. So it also, it really does connect some dots here, and I find it to be quite interesting. I need to learn more about Phoenicia and the Venetians. We've already learned quite a bit about the black nobility. And so, there it is presented to you. So, I suppose we should move on to the book we're reading now, The Curse of Canaan, by Eustace Mullins. We're on page 11, ironically, and I'm going to move back a little bit and just read a little bit from start, a little bit before we left off. Colonel Garnier, in his great work, The Worship of the Dead, quotes Strabo's observation that the Cushites inhabit the coastal region of all Asia and Africa. They were never aggressive enough to fight for or remain on higher ground. They were forced to remain in the low, swampy areas, exposed to the elements, areas which other peoples would not contest them for. That means that the Negroes were in the midst of the continent of Africa. They were not in South Africa. They were not in, what I said last week, they were not in Egypt until later when they were brought in to serve in the army. So they didn't live in the high ranges, and they stayed in the swampy areas, you see, which is exactly where the father wanted them to stay. Garnier continues, page 78 of The Worship of the Dead. We have also seen that Osiris was black, or of the Cushite race, that this was a characteristic of the Egyptians, he's trying to say. Herodotus speaks of the Egyptians generally as black and woolly-haired. There were two races in Egypt, the Mizraimites, who first colonized the country, and the black Egyptians. Now, remember what I'm saying is, the black Egyptians weren't there in the beginning. The latter, these black Egyptians, receiving their name from Aegyptus, the son of Belus, i.e. Cush. Now, it's funny that Eustace does not know that there are two Cushes. And Osiris, his color was green. All you have to do is look at the many, I have many articles on my site about how Egypt was white. And there's even a picture of Negro, how do I put this nicely? Penis washers. You must understand, I don't understand some of the things, you know, that this that he's putting here, but I'm reading it nevertheless. I don't agree with it. Egypt was white when it was in its apex. There is no doubt about it. They were not. Osiris was the green man, not a black man. So, there can be little doubt, therefore, that Aegyptus, the father of the black Egyptians, the son of Belus, is the same as the black Osiris. On page 92, Garnier informs us the Aryan immigration and Brahmanism were subsequent to that of the Cushite race, more or less hostile to them for their and their religion. We find Aryan traditions speaking of themselves as white, as the Dacians, as black, i.e. Cushite. Garnier quotes a description of the Cushites as follows. They call them demons and devil worshippers and lascivious wretches who make god of the cisna, the lingam, and the phallus. They make god of the cisna, lingam, which we know is the penis, and the phallus. They're all known as the penis. Garnier goes on in page 131 to observe that Buddha must be identified with those gods whose human origin was Cushite. From Cush, the great prophet and teacher of the ancient paganism, the father of the black or Ethiopian race. You see, but Buddha was white, as far as we know. He wasn't a Chinaman either. Buddha, although the chief god of the yellow race, is constantly represented as black with woolly hair and Negro features. The flat noses and thick lips of many of the ancient statues which occur in Hinduism, for these are clearly well-known features of the genuine African Negro. The human origin of Buddha was Kush. So he's saying some things that I don't agree with, okay? But I'm reading it to you anyway because we want to take an objective look at everything, right? I've told you where I think the origin and what the possible origins of the blacks are. Ham's subsequent acts did nothing to clear his reputation. He stole the garments which God had made for Adam and Eve before he expelled them from the Garden of Eden. Cush inherited these garments from Ham and passed them on to his son Nimrod. Because of these garments, Nimrod became known as the Mighty Hunter. He was considered to be invincible as long as he wore the garments, which are recorded, he says, in Genesis 3:21. Animals and men cowered before the onslaught of Nimrod because of these garments, which conferred great powers upon him. Encyclopedia Judaica. Nimrod, who was born on December 25th, the High Sabbath of Babylon. Did you hear that? December 25th is the High Sabbath of Babylon. Was the founder of Babylon and the city of Nineveh. Nineveh's being in Assyria, right? In the history of mankind, now he's not saying humankind, Nimrod stands unequaled for his symbolism of evil and satanic practices. He is credited for having founded Freemasonry, remember I told you that? And for building the legendary Tower of Babel. Believe me, no Negro is going to build any towers or anything like that. This is ridiculous. I don't know why Eustace would say such things. I don't know if he's actually saying that Nimrod was black or not, but he wasn't. Nimrod stands unequaled for his symbolism of evil and satanic practices. He is credited for having founded Freemasonry and for building the legendary Tower of Babel in defiance of God's will. Jeez, does that sound familiar? Is anybody building a tower to Babel in defiance of God's will today? In Talmudic literature, he is noted as he who made all the people lubel against God, meaning I would say rebel against God. Pes 94b, the legend of the Midrash, recounts that when Nimrod was informed of Abraham's birth, he ordered all the male children killed to be certain of eliminating him. Abraham was hidden in a cave, but in the latter life he was discovered by Nimrod, who then ordered him to worship fire. Abraham was refused and was thrown into the fire. The legendary symbol for Nimrod is X. The use of this symbol always denotes witchcraft. When X is used as a shortened form meaning Christmas, it actually means to celebrate the Feast of Nimrod. A double X, which has always meant a double cross or betrayal, in its fundamental meaning indicates one's betrayal into the hands of Satan. Now, XXX would mean the same thing, wouldn't it? It would be a triple cross into the fundamental meaning indicating one's betrayal into the hands of Satan, right? When American corporations use the X in their logo, such as Exxon, which has two X's, the historic Rockefeller firm of Standard Oil of New Jersey, there can be little doubt of this hidden meaning. The importance of Nimrod in any study of the occult cannot be overemphasized because of the powers given him by the clothing of Adam and Eve. Nimrod became the first man to rule the whole world. He indulged that power by launching excesses and horrors which have never been equaled. Ever since the time of Nimrod, Babylon has been the symbol of depravity and lust. Nimrod also introduced the practice of genocide to the world. His grandfather Ham, having consorted with other races and brought children of mixed race into the world, was persuaded by his consort, the evil Nama, that's N-A-A-M-A-H, to practice ritual murder and cannibalism. She informed Ham that by killing and eating fair-skinned people, are you listening? She, this Nama, She informed Ham that by killing and eating fair-skinned people, his descendants could regain their superior qualities. Sounds like the Jews today, doesn't it? Who's eating white flesh and drinking white blood? Why, the Canaanite Jews. People like Hillary Clinton, who pretends she's a white person. People like the Pope, who pretends he's white, when they're really Jews. And they're doing the rite of the ninth circle, drinking children's blood, raping children, and eating the flesh. Cannibalism. And what was the purpose of it, she said? That they could regain their superior qualities. Throughout the ensuing centuries, the fair-skinned descendants of Shem, Noah's oldest son, have ritually been slaughtered by the darker descendants of Ham and Nimrod in the world's most persistent campaign of racial and religious persecution. Not only did Nimrod kill and eat the fair-skinned descendants of Shem, in his fury and hatred, he often burned them alive. The type of human sacrifice, not human, the type of mankind sacrifice, involving the eating of the slaughtered victims, derived its name from the combined names of his uncle, Canaan, and the demon god Baal. The two names being combined to form the word cannibal. Very interesting. Are you hearing, ladies and gentlemen? Nimrod was known in ancient history by the names of Marduk, Bel, and Merodach. Because of his importance in its history, Babylon was known as the land of Nimrod. Nimrod is also cited in the most ancient Masonic constitutions as the founder of Freemasonry. Now, that's what I had told you before. Nimrod's downfall reputedly came about when he began to build the Tower of Babel, a ziggurat, or temple tower, which was planned to rise up to the heavens. Because of this offense against God, or Yahweh, Shem, the eldest son of Noah, pronounced judgment against Nimrod and executed him. Josephus says that Ham's black grandson, Nimrod, was beheaded by Shem. Now, we've got problems with that, because it is Esau that beheaded Shem. Remember that Esau, I believe this was from either the book of Jasher or the book of Enoch, I think Jasher, that the reason why he gave up his birthright for a thing of red pottage, which he really already gave it up because he didn't care about the things of the father, and he eventually race mixed himself out of oblivion. He ruined his bloodline, destroyed himself, and was absorbed by Edom. But he was out in the woods because he was a great hunter, just like Nimrod was. And he come out and surprised Nimrod and chopped his head off. Remember that the father said, when he was in the flesh, that he that lives by the sword dies by the sword. Well, it wasn't too long after that, I guess, that Esau was fighting against Abraham and Joseph and everybody else. And out from the field came a fellow with a sword and chopped off Esau's head. They left his head in the field and they dragged his body back to Edom. He that lives by the sword dies by the sword. See, the very thing he did to Nimrod was done to him. And no, I don't believe Nimrod was black. Not even for a second. Anyway, we present this stuff as, you know, take it for what it's worth. If you believe he's black, that's fine by me. You want to believe whatever you want to believe, but I'm telling you, I don't believe it for a second. So, other accounts add that Shem then cut Nimrod's body into pieces and sent the pieces to pagan temples of Babylon as a warning to the priests that their sex orgies and sacrifices would result in similar judgment of execution. Instead of abandoning their hideous ceremonies because of this warning, the priests literally went underground. No longer did their altars smoke with human blood. You mean blood of mankind, I think. As Kitto, the great Palestinian authority, described them, The priests took the pieces of Nimrod as relics to their secret meeting places, which were hidden in groves and shrines. This was the origin of the mystery cults, whose orgies could no longer be performed in public temples. Because of the power of Shem, the priests from that time conducted their forbidden orgies out of the light of day in their secret hiding places. Their meetings were bound with secret rites, which no one outside of their order was permitted to know, on pain of death. This was the origin of the Gnostics, the knowing ones, who knew the secrets. It may be for this reason that Nimrod became known as the founder of Freemasonry, because his fundamental rites were established and invoked after he was killed in order to carry on his work of evil. Now, let me say this, that ISIS searched, this is how the story is supposed to go, that ISIS searched and found all the pieces and put all the pieces, this is like Humpty Dumpty. The only problem was she did not have his penis because it was swallowed, it was thrown into a lake and swallowed by fish. That's what the origin of the penis of Baal is, the generative principle, and so on and so forth. Okay, back to the book. The history of mankind for the past 3,000 years has been the history of struggle between the fair-skinned descendants of Shem and the darker-skinned descendants of his brother, Ham. Yet you will not find this struggle defined in any historical work. See, that's why I don't believe the Negroes were really any part of anything. They were kept where they were, like the Jews were kept in their locked down streets, their ghettos. But at a point they were let out. Just by having Egypt letting the Negro into Egypt, it destroyed the whole nation. Right? Right. But anyway, we'll just read what he says here. The records of the genocide against the people of Shem are apparent throughout the archives of history, but there is not a school or university whose faculty will apprise its students of this simple fact. This in itself explains much which is usually dismissed as being beyond explanation. As I've always told you, there is truth there. But one has to read between the lines of any truth teller, including myself or anybody else. I would recommend that you're able to read between the lines and that you're able to derive the truth out of it, extract it. I am not right about every single thing I talk about. I couldn't be. How could I know that I'm right? Totally. But I am right about a lot of things. There's no doubt about it. Take it for what it's worth. But let's continue. So this in itself explains, which is usually dismissed as being beyond explanation. The reason for this odd development is that the descendants of Ham traditionally have usurped the educational process. See, the descendants of Ham, Negroes have nothing to do with the educational process. You see what I'm trying to say to you? See, I don't know, but it seems like he believes this idea that all humans or all people on the earth were killed during the flood, and that now these races were brought about through the loins of Noah. And I just don't believe that for a second. So, that's why this sounds funny, right? What would the Negroes have to do with education? I mean, let's get real. The reason for this odd development is that the descendants of Ham traditionally have usurped the educational process through their earlier usurpation of the priesthood to carry on their satanic work. They have controlled the educational system ever since, converting it to their own evil purposes. Have the blacks converted the... Of course not. These descendants of Ham have nothing to do with blacks as far as I'm concerned. That's the way I state it. Could I be wrong? It's not likely. It is of even greater interest that not a single school of theology anywhere in the world takes a note of this central fact of history, a red thread which continually runs throughout the world of events, a red thread. Perez and Zara Judah. And now the red thread representing the Kabbalah in Jewry. The red thread. In the Greek language, Shem appears as Ihu. In Egyptian mythology, he is Shu, the son of Ra, the sun god. I told you Ra means evil in Hebrew. It was through claimed descent from Shem that Louis, the king of France, called himself the Sun King. However, a much more important point, and one that has been obscured and hidden from by the priests who controlled the educational system throughout the last 3,000 years, is the fact that it was Shem who founded and built the great civilization of Egypt. Okay, he's admitting it there. Okay? Didn't I tell you that? Now, I do believe that. Any great civilization was built by us. If the Phoenicians, I'm sure that some of our people were there with the Phoenicians, but great countries throughout all of time, they always had something. Jews are always on our heels, like it said it would be in the garden. They're always nipping at our heels. They're a serpent. And we get tired of the nipping once in a while, and we crush their head beneath our feet, you see. They're always following us. Out of Egypt they followed us. The mixed multitude followed us out of Egypt. The rulers of Egypt were called pharaohs from the Hebrew word pyra, meaning long hair. The native Egyptians were short-haired. Not only was Shem long-haired, he was also fair-haired. In their records, the priests call Shem Shufu or Khufu, which means long hair. Being a great warrior, Shem easily led his people in the conquest of the native Egyptians. He immediately set out to commemorate his reign by building the Great Pyramid at Giza. Babylon was then overcome by the son of Shem, Elam, a later descendant, Cyrus of Persia, an Elamite, completed the first conquest of Babylon and built the great Persian Empire. It was to signify his great military successes that Shem adopted as his symbol the lion, which is still the symbol of rulers today. The Great Pyramid was later called Kuit, the horizon in which Khufu had been swallowed up, as the western horizon swallowed up the sun each evening. After extensive archaeological investigations, the Royal Astronomer of Scotland concluded that the evidence was irrefutable that the Great Pyramid of Giza had been built by Shem. He found the name Shufu inside the pyramid, painted in red, which signified Shem's fair hair. Also inside the pyramid was an inscription placed there after the death of the descendant, Amenhotep IV. Some say that was Joseph. He stopped the barbaric practices of the priests, which had been introduced by Nema and her followers from Babylon, including Nimrod. The priests murdered Amenhotep IV so that they could resume their orgies and lust and child sacrifices. Well, I guess that it isn't Joseph, but some people say it is anyway. They had admitted to Herodotus that the Great Pyramid had been built by a wandering shepherd. An odd observation is shepherds do not usually create such grandiose monuments to themselves. However, this was one of the terms of derision by which they always referred to Shem after his death. On other inscriptions by the priests throughout the centuries of Egyptian history revile Shem as pig, dwarf, and other terms, signifying their hatred of him, possibly because he slew their mentor Nimrod. In the same areas and other inscriptions extol the degenerate Ham, who had been corrupted by his consort, the evil Nema, and introduced the practices of human sacrifice and cannibalism. Are you digging it? I will say one thing, though. The blacks still practice cannibalism today, even in America. Egyptian civilization reached its peak during the reign of Shem. See, Shemite, Semite. You see, that's not Jew. Jews are not Semites. Shem and also the bondservant, the offspring of Abraham, he had 12 sons, and they were white Semite people. They've been race mixed out of oblivion to this day, and I don't know how much of Ishmael is left. I don't know if there's any Ishmael left. And Shem, the Shemite people, are being genocided today. We, the white Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, Nordic, and Germanic peoples, are being just like Shem had been, I believe. I don't know how much Shem is left. I don't know if there's any Shem left. Shem is white. Abraham was white. He wasn't a Jew. I mean, people are just, I don't know. So again, Egyptian civilization reached its peak. Isn't it interesting that there were people living in the area of Egypt, but Shem came in and made it a great nation? There were people living in Africa, but not in South Africa, and Shem came in and made a great nation at the top and the bottom. And there were cannibals and, you know, wild animal people living here too. But Shem made this United States of America a great nation. It wasn't the Indians who made it a great nation. They were just like these Africans in a sense, but much more civilized compared to Africans. Still not civilized though, but much more civilized. As far as I know, even some of the Indian tribes were white. See, the non-Semitic, Shemitic people, the Jews, have used Hollywood to taint your idea of who Indians are and were. Kind of funny that the red man, white man, is able to blush, right? Well, when we get a sunburn, we kind of look like the red man, wouldn't we? All right, so enough, you know, just a thought. Egyptian civilization reached its peak during the reign of Shem. The Sphinx is now admitted to be a portrait of him, and that's why somebody took his nose off so you couldn't identify him as white. Although that's an hybrid of a lion and a man, so it's an abomination anyway, and it should be busted up. It should be broken down. Not the pyramids necessarily, but those sphinxes. The Sphinx is now admitted to be a portrait of him. After his death, the priests not only resumed their evil practices, but they embarked on a successful campaign to black out his name from recorded history. Gee, really? A campaign which has largely succeeded during the ensuing 3,000 years. It says that they also launched terrible punitive actions against Shem's fair-haired descendants, often murdering them or burning them alive. Not only did the priests falsify the records of Shem, but they also succeeded in eliminating most of the subsequent history of his fair-skinned descendants, the Shemites, or as they are sometimes called, the Semites. You see, again, what I was talking about was that when you look at Egypt today, the people are fooled into thinking, well, those are the same people that lived in Egypt at the beginning or when it was at its apex. But that's not true. But that's what they want you to believe, because all of white history is to be erased by these Jews and the humans. The humans are very jealous of us. They all want to be white, just like, you know, the Jews are humans as well. They're not mankind. None of them are. They all wish they could be mankind, but they can't be. So they want to destroy us and have been doing this for a very, very long time in many, many fashions. So it continues. The Arab scholar Murtadi noted that Num and Shufu, the builders of the pyramids, lived with Noah. British Museum Catalog, 1909. Shem was also referred to by the name of Menes. Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. from the Hebrew meni or man, which appears in the Egyptian Book of the Dead. See, Shem is referred to as man, not human. See, I'm going to keep on honing in on this because the Father brought it to my attention somehow, some way. I don't know how it even happened. It just happens. All of a sudden, I realize these things. See, Shem, see, what does it say here again? It says that Shem was also referred to by the name of Menes, M-E-N-E-S, from the Hebrew Meni, M-E-N-I, or man, which appears in the Egyptian Book of the Dead, referring, and he shows a pyramid here, slaves, peasants, craftsmen, scribes, nobles, priests, and Pharaoh. So there's a little thing, society in ancient Egypt. And the way they portray it is in black and white, and it looks as if everybody is black in this society, but that's not the way it is at all. It's a lie. Osiris is the green man. He's not the black man. This is evident if you do any kind of thing. So Shem, again, refers to man, which appears in the Egyptian Book of the Dead, referring to Uranus and his three sons, an obvious reference to Noah. Ham later became known as the Egyptian god Ammon. Amen? Yeah. You wonder why I don't say amen or any of these things, but, you know, nevertheless. Herodotus writes in his First King of Egypt, writes that the first king of Egypt who reigned until 2320 BC, Eusebius says that 300 successive sovereigns descended from him. The Thinite kings who had succeeded the demigods. The historian Murtado refers to Shem as Menes, again man, as the most able son of Noah. Shem exemplifies the qualities upon which all subsequent civilizations have been built. Courage, the desire to build, and the willingness to subdue those who have adopted a lower form of life. He is the Adamite who created civilizations as we have known it. On the other hand, the descendants of Ham, the Canaanites, exemplify the satanic urge to destroy civilization and to rebel against God. J. Hewlett points out that the Adamite meant a thinker, and Mena, or man, produced Menes, the thinking man. This survives today in the intellectual society. Menza, the distinction was made to distinguish the lineage of Adam from the pre-Adamites, or non-thinking men. See, it's funny that he knows about the pre-Adamites, too. It's very strange. The only thing I think the problem is that he doesn't understand that all those people weren't destroyed during the flood. So he thinks something happened on the ship, on the ark, that brought these people out again. And I don't agree. However, it doesn't matter in the sense of you just have to kind of navigate and understand things and read between the lines, like I told you. The Jewish Encyclopedia says that Shem became the king of Jerusalem as the representative of Yahweh so that he could carry on the battle against the slave people, the Canaanites. See, he didn't have any problem with saying Yahweh here. See, Shem became the king of Jerusalem as the representative of Yahweh. You see? And no, Yahweh is not a Canaanite god, and no, Yahweh is not both male and female. We call him Father. We don't call him queer. In Genesis, we find this verse, blessed be, it says the Lord. I'm going to say Yahweh, the God of Shem. Genesis 9:26. Shem had five sons, Elam, from whom came the Persian Empire. Now, isn't Persia Iran? Wasn't Iran once a white people? Didn't Iran once help the Israelites escape the Assyrians and get over the Caucasus Mountains to inhabit Europe and create the nations of Europe? Yeah. Do you wonder why the Canaanite, Edomite Jews still want revenge against the Persian Empire? You know, Iran. See, there's a reason why they changed the names, because they don't want you to be able to connect it to history and the Bible and so on and so forth. You'd be surprised how many times the maps have changed, which hides everything. Isn't it amazing what I'm telling you? You think about these things. I'm telling you, it's heavy stuff. We're just going to go a little over time here. We're already a little over time, but let's finish a little bit here. So, Shem had five sons: Elam, from whom came the Persian Empire; Ashur, from whom came the Assyrian Empire; Arpachshad, Lud, and Aram. So great was the reverence for the name of Shem in the ancient world that his name in many records became synonymous with Yahweh. Yahweh, or in a later version, Jehovah, which is the name of the devil, it's not the name of Yahweh at all, derives directly from the Hebrew verb hava, meaning I am. No, you see, Jehovah does not, as we well know, that Jehovah does not, that's what I was going to tell you about the fellow. He tried to tell me that a Catholic monk created the name Yahweh and that it's a false name. And I had to correct him and say, no, 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 no. The Catholic monk created the name Jehovah, and he created it by using the tetragrammaton and mixing it with the word Adonai, which means Lord or Baal. Jehovah is one of the names of the devil, not the Father in heaven. Make that clear. I've already proven that, and we're going to stick to it. It derives from the meaning I am. Historically, this was read as the older Khufu or HWFW instead of YHWH, and thus refers to Khufu or Shem, the builder of the Great Pyramid. It was because of the persecutions of the fair-skinned peoples by the priests of that Khufu, which phonetically is almost identical with the Hebrew Hava, became Yahweh, the god of the Exodus from Egypt. The Encyclopedia Britannica notes of Jehovah, the pronunciation is an error resulting among Christians combining the consonants Yahweh with the vowels of Adonai, Lord, just like I just told you. Good for you, Eustace. Which was substituted by Jews for the sacred name of Yahweh, commonly called the Tetragrammaton, or four consonants. The name Jehovah first appears in the manuscript of Martin's Poggio in the 14th century. Thus, the name Jehovah, which is commonly used in our churches, is only 500 years old, and it is another name of the devil. Just like Lord is the name of the devil. Except when you say, if you wish to say that Lord means owner, yes, the Father owns us, but the Lord of this world owns this world at this point. I mean, Yahweh ultimately owns it, but really, he's the one that owns and runs the kingdoms, or else how could he have told Yeshua that he would give him the kingdoms of this world? You see? So the Lord of this world is Baal. That's who all these people are aligning themselves with across the world today as we are witnessing them bowing their knee to Baal. They are swearing to Baal. They are giving allegiance to Baal, etc., etc. Make no mistake, he's the Lord of this world, not the Father. The Father owns it all, but this fellow's in charge temporarily, you see, for the purpose of this test, and so on and so forth. So, isn't that interesting? So, in order to understand why the name Shem was systematically reviled and concealed throughout the records of history, we must return to the record of this thoroughly degenerate and evil nephew, Canaan. Canaan was so wicked that his last will and testament to his children was a formula for vice. It read, and this is what the Jews teach their children today. Listen carefully now. I've read this to you before in times past. Love one another. That is, of this tribe only, speaking of Jews. They're just Canaanites, you know what I mean? This remarkable, okay, so what it says is love one another, that is this tribe only, love robbery, love lewdness, hate your masters, and do not speak the truth. Does that not tell you about the Canaanite, Edomite Jews and how they live? And that's what they teach their children today. Yes, it is. So we see that Canaan, it's a very interesting thing what goes on with Canaan. This remarkable document, The Will of Canaan, is to be found in only one place in all the world's theological literature, the Babylonian Talmud, where it is presented thusly. Five things did Canaan charge his sons: love one another, love robbery, love lewdness, hate your masters, and do not speak the truth. Well, the Jews have no problem with any of that. They rob us all the time. They love homosexuality and all kinds of perversions. They hate us. They hate our father. And they certainly very rarely speak the truth unless it's to gain an advantage. The will of Canaan has been the Canaanites' prescription for all their operations during the ensuing 3,000 years. Meanwhile, the people of Shem, knowing nothing of this document, vainly tried to convert, quote-unquote, the Canaanites and turn them from their evil ways. If the descendants of Shem had been warned of the precepts imparted by this document, the history of the last 3,000 years could have been very different. Yes, you know, that's what I talked about with the Catholics. If they had just listened to Jesus Christ, he would have let them know that the reason why he taught in parables and so on and so forth was because these people are not to be converted. He knows these Jews. He knows that it was all on the outside with them, but inside was full of dead men's bones. He knew that they would never truly convert, and he warned us about it. Anyway, the will of Canaan today remains the operating instructions of the Canaanite heirs who presently control the world order. At the same time, it remains unknown to the peoples whom the Canaanites continue to rob, enslave, and massacre. The will of Canaan contains the instructions necessary to resist the results of the curse of Canaan, which condemn them to slavery. The instructions to hate your masters, that is, Shem and Japheth and their descendants, is a command to commit genocide against the people of Shem. For this reason, all subsequent Canaanite rites are based upon these exhortations to struggle and commit acts of violence against the people of Shem. Do we see this today? We certainly do. Who's participating in this? Why, the blacks are, because they are of Canaanite extraction as well. In other words, I believe they mixed with Cain. It is not only the basis for all of the revolutions and liberation movements since that time, it is also a basic incitement to commit genocide and to carry on racial wars. Because of the 3,000-year historical blackout, the people of Shem have never understood their peril, and they have frequently been subject to massacre because of their essential goodness made it possible for them to believe the vileness of the Canaanites. The will of Canaan has always been concealed from them because it is the basic program of conspiracy that secret rites which enable Canaanites to wreak their hatred upon the descendants of Shem. I'm going to read that again. The will of Canaan has always been concealed from them because it is the basic program of conspiracy and secret rites which enable the Canaanites to wreak their hatred upon the descendants of Shem. Much of the continuous hostility between these two forces, you see the two seed line theology, you see again, much of the Jacob and Esau, Cain and Abel, the wheat and the tares, you understand. Much of the continuous hostility between these two forces is mentioned in the Bible, but never in the basic form which it has been stated here for the first time. In his book, The Mystery of the Ages, Herbert Armstrong, comments, Canaanites who were racially dark had settled the land. See, anybody that is not white is another shade of darkness in them. right? So the people that have mixed with darker people, like the Eitralians, are a shade darker, right? And then it goes all the way down to the coal black Negro, the Indian, Eastern Indian. You see that that's a shade higher than the black, coal black, et cetera, et cetera. And then you go up and you see the Muslim. These are still shades of humanity, of colored man, not man or mankind, but colored. God commands the Israelites to drive them out. Page 172, Armstrong cites Numbers 33 as the basis for this reference. During the centuries of oppression and mass murder, God has not stood aside from his people. On the contrary, he has frequently exhorted them to attack and rid themselves of the peril of the Canaanites. In the early years of this struggle, it was still possible for his children to hear and obey. This vision of Obadiah is recounted in Obadiah 20, and the capacity of this host of the children of Israel shall possess that of the Canaanites, even unto Zarephath. Actually, let me try to say this again. Zarephath. And this capacity of Israel, which is in Sepharad, shall possess these cities of the south. Significantly, Revised Standard Version omits the mention of the Canaanites entirely. Again, hear that again? Significantly, the Revised Standard Version omits the mention of the Canaanites entirely. The battle continued over the period of centuries in Joshua, which is just like Yahshua, you see, because J would be Y, Yahshua. In Joshua 17:13, we read, "Yet it came to pass when the children of Israel were waxen strong, and they put the Canaanites to tribute, but did not utterly drive them out." See, that was the problem. They didn't obey. We didn't obey the Father because we're too merciful. God expressed, or Yahweh expressed, his will in the strongest terms of his children in Numbers 33, 52 through verse 56. "Ye shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land, Canaan, before you, and ye shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land and dwell therein. For I have given you the land to possess it. But if ye will not drive out the inhabitants of the land before you, then it shall come to pass," now listen, "that those whom you let remain, of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and shall vex you in the land wherein you dwell. It shall come to pass that I shall do unto you as I thought to do unto them." You digging that? That's where we're going to leave off right there, folks. We're on page 17. Again, let me say this again. This is Numbers 33, verse 52 through 56. "And ye shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land," these Canaanites, ye shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land, Canaan, before you, "and ye shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land and dwell therein. For I have given you the land to possess it," like he has in America and in Europe, right? "But if you will not drive out the inhabitants of the land before you, then it will come to pass that those who you let remain, of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your side, and shall vex you in the land wherein you dwell. It shall come to pass that I shall do unto you as I thought to do unto them." At the end of the Rabbit Hole radio show, I always give a good piece of advice, and that is, don't go down the wrong hole.
They bring disgrace. A man without a face. just do the best you can. Lines that they told erased. A man without a face.